Thank you for the introduction. I have to start personally. I began working in pastoral care at the University Hospital of Bern 8 years ago. I am active in orthopedics, the cardiology department, and intensive care medicine. I had great respect for the work in the intensive care medicine. That's why I pay special attention to work in this field. There one finds patients who are lying there, and if somebody touches them, they don't budge. They cannot live without ventilation. They're often in altered states of consciousness. And now, as a pastoral counselor, pastoral care is very appreciated there in the intensive care unit. We are often called by the medical personnel to see, to go to patients' distressed and concerned relatives and close ones, patients who request a talk, to those who indicate a religious need, for example, when close ones request spiritual assistance, and to dying patients and their relatives. But so we don't see a very great number of the patients there. I sometimes hear from the medical personnel that I needn't go to someone because she's not aware of the surroundings, or is not conscious, or not responsive, in the sense of it should be worthless to go there. You can do better things. Maybe. But no one of them would deny that all these patients are very ill. And isn't that precisely my job? As seen in Matthew 25, namely to go to these people who are very ill. The question is, how can I reach them? And how can I support them? I found, and I participated in several special trainings in Munich, you see the announcement, and came across a concept called, in translation, Dreamland Intensivstation, which is based on Arnold Mindell's method of process-oriented psychology for pastoral care. There I learned some hard and soft skills of process-oriented accompaniment, and since then I have worked with them. One of the teachers published recently the first explorative empirical study of awareness in comatose states and the possibility of contact and communication with comatose patients in a neurological intensive care unit setting using process-oriented coma work methods.
So in our pastoral unit of the hospital here in Bern, we are this year, also the year before, we are doing an evaluation and discussing the feasibility and the opportunities of coma work in the accompaniment of patients. Because as you maybe can feel, it's in a university hospital, it's not a very known way to communicate with persons or people in a comatose situation. So we are evaluating whether or not these process-oriented methods of Dreamland concept should be part in our standard praxis, since, and that seems to be very important, the skills can be used not only when dealing with people in coma in the intensive care unit, but also in many situations when patients are confronted with altered states of consciousness. So, for example, there's a new unit of palliative care. So there are also many patients you cannot talk with them. You have to find other skills, other forms of communication. So we found this concept very, very interesting. But we have also in our team like people who are critical. They ask, for example, one of the most important question was, I put it here, is there any consciousness in unconscious states? So this is clear, it's a very fundamental question. If there is no conscious in unconscious state, you cannot communicate in a way. So we found varying in research literature many reports from patients, for example, after a period of unconsciousness. So they were in a period of unconsciousness. Afterwards, research person were discussing with them, do you have any ideas of what was happening when you was in this unconscious state? And there are many people there are some research what people have done there. So 1/3 to half of all people, they say they have, for example, dreams. They know what happened in their mind. So that's one like topic of research in this field, and there are other topics. So varying methods such as auditory brainstem response or event related potentials and neuroimaging techniques. So I'm not medicine man, I have to read this here, but for us it was important to find research what can really show. And it seems to be that this is quite clear that they can show. For example, that there were studies doing with somebody is talking to one who is in comatose situation, and he's naming his name. And important was in the studies that this person is knowing the other one, so the voice is known. And then you can see also in brain that there's something happening in this area, an understanding in the person of in a comatose situation. So there are various studies, they show, as we think, that there is consciousness in this situation.
So a process-oriented approach tends to find minimal cues in the body language of the patient. I assume that minimal cues are potential doorways to communicating with a comatose person. Nonverbal communication can occur through any sensory channel, for example, through sight, sound, or a proprioceptive channel, that means the feeling. I carefully observe even the smallest movements or changes in the patients and consider these quite possibly to be significant or meaningful. And I have to be able to well observe my own reactions and impressions resulting from the encounter with the patient. And these two form an important part of my work. We would like to bring an example. I would like to name a certain case which I experienced at this hospital in last December.
As we were preparing this speech here, we thought to provide an insight to the comma work, it's required to give you a concrete example, because it makes the thing more concrete. You get an idea of this work, as we think. And by this means, you can follow now the idea of comma work in actu, in a way. And this scene will take a little time. And we invite you, if you like, to relax a little bit and to let arise maybe this scene. And when we accompany people in coma, we need to take our time. So it's a work what takes time. You cannot go to a comatose people and then do this in 5 minutes. So there's really, it's time is needed. So this takes also a little bit time now to show you this example. And also we think we have to be very open and very alert and relaxed in once. So this is about something about the attitude where you go to meet a person in coma. And now comes this.
So let's meet Mrs. Sender, a 70-year-old car accident victim who has suffered head injuries and various fractured bones. She requires respiratory assistance. She is no longer sedated. 3 days before, I had come into contact with her husband and her sister at the bedside. The nurse asks me how much time I require so that she can coordinate my visit with the physiotherapist. She's willing to give me uninterrupted access to the patient. I had already acquainted myself with the patient's medical program, her breathing, and her state of consciousness. And now Pascal will quote my remarks at the time we're waiting, and I will explain what I did and felt at the time. So then we start for this section of this visit. I enter the room and stand next to the bed. I take a few breaths. Then I take a few breaths in harmony with her breathing. Then again in pace with her breathing and speaking when exhaling.
Hello, Miss Sender. I'm Ingrid Zürcher, the chaplain. I have come to visit you. I have come to see you. I am here to be with you. I will try to help you along your way. Let's trust that together we can find what's important to you at the moment. Believe in your experiences. Follow what happens. And believe in what is happening now. In a short time, I'm going to touch your wrist and press it when you exhale.
I make sure that I'm standing at ease. And I try to be at one with the patient and do what I just described.
Breathing. Breathing. Breathing means you are alive.
Breathing together in this way connects us. Over a period of minutes, I slowly resume my own breathing pattern and allow my harmonizing by voice and breathing to tail off.
Yes.
While still holding her wrist, I look towards her feet and towards her face.
I am now looking in the same direction as you.
I take my hand away from her arm.
I am now looking towards you, towards your face.
And now I try to get a complete picture of her. I look and try to perceive, to see what I am receiving and how it feels. I sense a heaviness and a certain contentment. The way she's lying gives me the impression.
I have the impression that you are lying very comfortably. The bed carries you and you are letting yourself be carried. The ground carries us. The earth carries us.
Now I look to see if anything is happening. Her eyes are moving underneath her eyelids.
I see that your eyes are moving.
Her eyes move again.
Yes, your eyes are moving. They are wandering. Try to be aware of what you sense.
I feel that she is hearing.
If you hear something, listen to it. Listen how it sounds. Listen to what you hear.
Her eyes move again underneath her eyelids. This time, they make a circular motion rather than moving from side to side and towards the ear.
Listen. If you can hear a voice, listen to it. If it's music or a melody, listen. And let yourself be carried by it.
Now I see a slight twitching on the side of her nose.
Yes. Follow the sound. Listen to it intensely as hard as you can.
The eye movements are now reduced, but the energy is not. She moves her right arm That is not broken.
You are moving your arm.
I reflect the suddenness of this motion with a matching tone of voice.
You are moving the arm and fro. Oh, what a movement. That's it. Back and forth.
She moves her head to one side and stretches it upwards.
And now you're moving your head. Ah.
There are more facial movements now.
And now you appear to be yawning. You are moving a lot. Carry on moving, moving.
She makes the same arm movement like before, the head movement.
Yes, you are moving your arm.
I go round to the other side and touch her arm.
Your arm is moving from here to there.
I lead her arm along the course of its previous motion. She allows it with no resistance.
Like that.
I release my hold on her arm. Several seconds later, she repeats the movement again.
And again. Ah.
Then her arm sinks.
And now your arm is resting on your tummy and is moving with your breathing. Trust in what you have experienced.
I breathe out deeply and give a sigh of relief. Her face appears also to relax.
Yes, that's good. You are doing so well. Now I'll take a seat and sit down next to you for a while.
So far the example. The visit went on afterwards. Now, how can I know if I am on the right track, whether or not I'm reaching the patient? Feedback and energy is what the process-oriented method emphasizes. According to this method, it would seem to be clear that even a patient in a severely altered state of consciousness has a possibility to withdraw even further. I therefore consider small movements with the eyelid or greater movements with the arm as a positive feedback. So positive feedback is any change in the pattern that is going on. It may also be, if a patient has been very restless, that she gets more calm. It doesn't mean more activity, but a changement. Positive feedback is also about what I am noticing myself. Am I getting touched or set up? And what's going on in the field? And I would consider it as negative feedback if nothing were to happen and if the energy were to diminish following my intervention. No change, same pattern as before. This could mean that patient doesn't want my intervention. Perhaps she's content with the situation or is tired. Not so responsive at the moment. Perhaps I come back and try again later. Perhaps there was a physical activity, which is a big strain for the patient.
And as I may, like in addition, what was for us in the discussion of our team very important, I may just read one sentence of the book of Peter Ammann. He says there, minimal signals, as you told us now, breathing, changes in breathing rhythm or facial micro-expressions, changes in skin color, for example, many various signs, often interpreted in the medical paradigm as reflections, as reflex behavior, are seen as potentially meaningful and as expressions of inner processes. And for us, it's very important to say as potentially meaningful. We don't know if it's really meaningful. We don't know it when we start. Huh? It's not clear. But it's a door to say, maybe it is. And let's go through this door and see where the person with the signals leads us. So this is a very important thing to know about this work. This is potentially meaningful.
Well, and this positive feedback can lead us to an edge, where the patient switches the channel. And where there is positive feedback, we try to explore the deeper, to go deeper and deeper meaning, potential meaning. As I said, if you hear something, listen exactly to what you are hearing. This model we are working with assumes that human beings exist at different levels of reality. So when I observe the eyes move underneath the eyelids, this is a phenomenon at the consensus reality level, which can be measured, which we agreed, we have a language together, like a lamp is a lamp or a seat is a seat, it's clear. And then if you go deeper and you feel what's behind the symptom, this movement, how does it feel? It is an experience which only personally can be described and felt, really. And it is assumed that there is a third, even deeper level, a sentient level, a pre-signals experience. You could say there is an intimate trust, a non-judgmental level, a non-dualistic level, the potential where everything may come from. I consider these three levels to be connected, and I have to be aware of them and give importance to all three of them equally. So when I encourage a patient, based on a minimal cue, to trust what she's experiencing, that she may pay attention to what is happening in her dream level, it may come even from the deepest or deepest level and can be meaningful. From my experience in working like that, I can say I have found a good means of dealing with people in severely altered states of consciousness using a few cues at our disposal at the moment. And the approach which I have tried to show in my real life example is one possibility to get closer to the patients. It offers a kind of communication and helps to have a dialogue, a sort of dialogue. In such cases, it must be possible for us to put aside for a while the role of the observer and to establish a personal encounter between the professional and the patient. And what I find very convincing is that coma work helps making patients to be active participants in their own care. That is what I find really extraordinary. That's not the case in the thinking of the mainstream medicine. Well, so far from our side at the moment.
Thank you a lot for this kind of experience.
Yes, yes, really.
You presented very well. So, questions or discussions?
Yeah, also.
The last sense.
It's absolutely a wonderful presentation and very good intention. But I run an organization in Italy called Telehealth, and we have a part of research just to take care, to be in touch with people in different way. You use the languages. So I try to use altered state of consciousness to go inside, to go closer to the common people. I set up a kind of meditation, it's called therapeutic meditation, where I go deeply in the meditated state, and then I stay just straight on the patients and try to find a deeper relation with the patients, mm-hmm. just using a consciousness that you improve during the meditation. And there is a way to go in a kind of non-dual communication with the patients. Mm-hmm. I try to use them with a healthy, with a healthy patient, with healthy people, also with healthy, and sure that I could communicate in this way. Mm-hmm. Because when I put, for instance, at the hands on the legs of the patients, I was able to feel a lot of sensation. Mm-hmm. And if you are able to accept this sensation, mm-hmm. Something happens in mm-hmm. the relation between me and mm-hmm. the patient. So it's so easy and so good, because my unit practice, you can have some kind of communication with the patient. Mm-hmm. If I put some intention during this meditation pattern, I have some other feeling, and they are able to accept the feeling. I absolutely know that something happens in the meditation between me and the patient. Mm-hmm. And you can ensure that now we can just study and start a research in this way, because there is a device that is able to look after the flow of the cerebral flow for the people who meditate and the people who stay in the meditation. In the field of meditation, ensure that I'm able to put in the relationship some intention, emotional intention, and you look at the cerebral flow of the patient, you come to something happens in the limbic area. Mm-hmm. So this is a good path for research. If you wish, you can talk a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Interesting, yes.
It's an invitation, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you tell us afterwards, you're very interesting. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And it has something to do, I think, when I understand you correctly, that in this work, we say that you also, like your state, when you go in contact, you have to change. You cannot be, like you told, the observer. Mm-hmm. You have to go in another state to feel. Mm-hmm. And I found a very nice, it's a picture, eh? But I liked it quite a lot. I have also, myself, I have a little children, and he said, when you are with the baby, you have the baby, you change in your attitude as you go in communication. You see what I mean? So you have to change yourself in the attitude to go in contact with the baby. So you cannot talk in the same way as you talk with an adult. It's not the same quite a system of language and patterns of communication. So you really have to change. Like a picture, it's not the same thing.
Need to able to go in another altered state.
Yes, exactly. That's what I mean.
And when you are able to arrive in this state of consciousness, you could be connected.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly.
With a patient.
Exactly.
Did you have feedbacks from patients you worked with after having done this?
Yeah.
For me, not very often, and not so much personally. When I talk to them, I met you earlier. Sometimes they are not very astonished, as if there was a basic. Already, but very very often I don't see them afterwards, after their comatose state.
See them.
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. That was also one question our team. Mm-hmm. Do the person afterward, they can say something? Can they say, we would love it if they would say, oh, it was just perfect. You were there, you were having the right communication. I will read an article. So not in this way, but also the same question we were discussing with him, with Peter Ammann, like this process work. So they say they get feedback. But they don't get feedback like 90%, but they get feedback. The people are saying, yes, I know there was something with you. This is existing, mm-hmm. but it's not mm-hmm. every time like this. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. open question, and also interesting research question, mm-hmm. of course. Mm-hmm. And what he's doing in his work is that when he does this communication, he's measuring the skin, the
conductance.
Yeah, exactly. And there he can show that there is happening something in the other person. He can show that there's happening something. Huh? What is it? That's the next question. That's another form of communication to say, what is it in this time? Yeah.
Did you get feedback? Maybe you get feedback. Some of the patients.
I don't work with patients like that.
We have to work with children, don't
we? Yes, I work with children. Naturally, there is similar things as you did before. You have to go to the level of the child, or as you, as he said before, you have to connect in an unconscious way. You can do it. For instance, I'm doing a certain training of Medau. It's certain gymnastic training, but where you are focused on the consciousness of the movement and so on. And there you enter in a relation with some other people only through physical
contact.
Yes, yes, and you can feel a lot of things.
Oh, well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.